I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you're going to hear the second and final part of an interview between radio show host Kevin Barrett of No Lies Radio and author Dr. David Ray Griffin that was done on April 19th, 2011. That will be followed by some 9/11 and related news updates, and then I'll tell you about three upcoming events. So let's begin with the final part of the interview between Kevin Barrett of No Lies Radio and Dr. David Ray Griffin.
Let's move on to a related question. The reason that the Pentagon issue is so important, as we said, is that it does suggest that this is a complete inside job. There weren't any hijackings or any hijackers. And, of course, we know, as various researchers, including Elias Davidson, have pointed out, that there's no evidence that any of these guys were even on the planes, the people they blamed, and quite a bit of evidence that most of them weren't. And then there's the issue of the alleged phone calls from the hijacked airliners, which is really the thing that has convinced everybody that there must have really been hijackers and hijackings. And David, you've done very good work on this issue in the past, and you're continuing to work on it. So tell us about where we are now in understanding the controversy about, were there really any phone calls from passengers on hijacked airliners?
Well, the short answer is no.
Okay.
But the long answer takes quite a bit, and I'm just finishing up an essay on the evidence for the calls as being faked, as being inauthentic. And you're right. And some people in the 9/11 movement have thought this isn't very important, and some have even suggested we shouldn't talk about this because this gets into controversial matters. Well, what isn't controversial
right
to 9/11? And so one way to get at this is the Tom Burnett calls. For those of you who don't know, Tom Burnett was said to have been a passenger on United 93. That, of course, is the airliner that they say crashed in Pennsylvania. The official story is that some of the men got together and decided to charge the cockpit and take the plane back over from the hijackers, and Tom Burnett was supposedly one of those. And he had made three or four calls to his wife, Dina Burnett, and this is all documented with the FBI, that this is exactly what she said. And she said that her husband had called her on his cell phone. Now, and she knew this because she looked at the caller ID, and there was Tom's cell phone number. So that's pretty strong evidence. And the problem is that the plane, Flight 93, was, according to the official accounts, over 40,000 feet in the air. And we know, or most of us know, that cell phones, or the kinds of cell phones that were available in 2001, would not do that. You couldn't have cell phone conversation. Now, you might get a brief signal, but the idea that you could talk for half a minute or a minute on the phone that was a plane that's at 40,000 feet and traveling 500 miles an hour, simply impossible. Virtually everybody, everybody who has studied the issue in a technical way agrees on that. And that's
right.
These cell phones conk out at 1 or 2,000 feet. So the idea that they could be at 40,000 feet, impossible. Well, here you have the dilemma. She clearly called. There would be nobody charging that she would make this up, no reason to make it up. But nevertheless, she says that these calls were on the cell phone. This seems very strong evidence that these were faked. And it gets even stronger when the FBI turns out its report, which it put out, sent to the, in the Mousavi trial in 2006, these became public, and they state in there that he called on the feedback phone. So how could that be? That's their official story, and clearly they don't want to be in the position of claiming that cell phone were working at 40,000 feet. So you can't blame the FBI for changing the story. But nevertheless, it's clear that they changed the story. It was on 9/11 itself that Dena Burnett was interviewed with the FBI, and they wrote it down. It's still published that he called on his cell phone. So some way or another, these three or four calls had to have been faked. So for me, that's the strongest bit of evidence, but then there are many other things that support that.
And in terms of the FBI report that Dena Burnett called her husband Tom, or rather Tom called Dena on the cell phone, do we know that just from the news stories, or do we actually have access to the original FBI report?
Yeah, we have the original FBI report dated 9/11/2001, and nobody questions that. But when they put out their report, whether it was 2004 when they gave their report to the 9/11 Commission, I think already there they were stating that it must have been a feedback phone. And then this became public information in 2006.
Now, how about these other calls? You mentioned that there are these three or four where we have evidence that the initial story was that they were cell phones. And also, didn't the media reported that either they were all cell calls or most of them were? The basic story for years was that these were cell phone calls, was it not?
There were a lot of the stories. About 15 of the calls were generally understood to have been cell phone calls. However, when you look back into the original documents, it's not so clear. And some of the early stories, one of them will say it was a cell phone. Another one will say it was a feedback phone. So you have to go back to the original documents. And there, some of the ones that I had cited in my previous essay turned out to be either false or at least ambiguous. So what I've got in my new essay is other kinds of evidence that suggest fakery. Another one has to do with Tom Burnett himself. It doesn't just hinge upon cell phone impossibility, but very strange thing that Dena reported. Now, she's reconstructing this from memory and from her notes. Nobody has recordings of these conversations. But she said that at a certain point, she said to Tom that the children are here, the two children, and they wanted to talk to him. And then Tom said, "Oh, I'll talk to him later." Now, this is at a time when he, Tom Burnett, in quote marks, we understand, because we don't know that this is definitely Tom Burnett, and I'm arguing that it was not the real Tom Burnett making the calls, that this was when the men were ready to charge the hijackers, and they were saying that they're going to wait till they're over a place where there's not many people on the ground, not a city, and try to take back the plane. But they realize that they may end up crashing the plane. And also that according to the stories, several people on the plane had already been killed, at least a couple people, by the hijackers. So Tom would have had pretty good evidence that he was going to die in the next few minutes, one way or the other. Can you imagine in that situation somebody saying to his wife, "Oh, tell the kids I'll talk to them later"?
Yeah, it's just, that's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. So that's another factor, is that there is very little noise and emotion in these phone calls. Everybody is reported as being very calm. The people who are the flight attendants, the passengers, almost all of them. So there's an article here called Shockingly Calm, going through the various cases. And these were, you know, at times, just as the plane is about ready to crash into the World Trade Center or crash into the Pennsylvania landscape, and some of the people, say, had already been killed by the hijackers, and everybody's just very calm. Nobody's screaming very much, and so on. So that's another kind of evidence, which by itself wouldn't carry a lot of weight, but when you put it together with the others, you see that there's pretty strong evidence.
Right. And there are people in the 9/11 Truth Movement who are very resistant to this. I guess they consider that it, to them it sounds like an outrageous conspiracy theory, the kind that Bush warned us against. But then, I mean, this whole conspiracy was apparently outrageous, blowing up the World Trade Center being pretty outrageous in itself. And I don't really think that the idea that with, or even without voice morphing, but especially with voice morphing, which is technology that allow someone to have their voice changed to mimic anybody that you've already pre-recorded for a couple of minutes. It doesn't strike me as all that implausible that people could be fooled in this way. That is, these people could be getting phone calls allegedly from their loved ones on these allegedly hijacked planes. And despite the voices being too calm and despite them saying things like, well, I'll talk to the kids later, honey, and things like that, the people would still believe it because that, well, we hear all the time about con artists who call people at random. And when they get sort of a, you know, sort of older sounding person, they say something like, what? The person says, who is this? Well, I'm your nephew. Don't you recognize me? And the person ends up parting with a substantial sum of money because the so-called nephew claims to be in trouble. When people are in trouble and they call their loved ones, I think that often the loved one is not really focusing on whether this is plausible, but rather on the content of what they're being told. But the problem is that you have to actually, you know, think this through and use some psychological sophistication and maybe, you know, look at some studies of this sort of thing to figure it out. And at face value, to a lot of people, it just sounds implausible that people could be fooled by someone posing as their loved ones.
Yeah, most people have not had a lot of experience with voice morphing. Mm-hmm. Now, we have quite a bit of experience with digital morphing of another type, that is with films. So we know the famous story, I mean the famous film in which the main character shook hands with President Kennedy.
Was that Forrest Gump?
Yeah, Forrest Gump. That was done so professionally that anybody who didn't know and didn't realize who would have thought this was an authentic encounter. But people don't have this experience with voice morphing. So in this article, I've gone through explaining in some detail the various techniques used for the voice morphing and the techniques also for the operators who would be calling. And interestingly, a fellow who was involved in the technology of developing the voice morphing, he then argued, oh, this is ridiculous. This could not have happened on 9/11, suggesting that it really wasn't that well developed. You could do that. And then a woman wrote to him and begged him to explain to her husband that you really could do this because there was a voice, somebody faked her voice, and now he is, I guess, wanted to divorce her or whatever because he believed that this guy really said what he said, and she's begging him, please explain to my husband that this is possible, in which he was arguing. But, he in the story that came out in 1999, over 2 years before 9/11, he explained that two of our best-known generals were morphed, and everybody in the room would have sworn those were the guys. So there's not that much different between voicing a general that you know very well and morphing a relative. And I wanted to mention one other case, the famous Todd Beamer case. he was the real hero in the public image of the flight going down in Pennsylvania, the idea being that they were able to protect. The idea was that the plane was either, that the flight 93 was either going to hit the other World Trade Center building, Building 7, or maybe hit the Capitol building. And so the idea is that these heroes prevented this great tragedy. Well, this Todd Beamer got on the phone and started to talk to one of the operators and went on and on and on talking to her. And at some point, her name was Lisa, said, well, look, I could put you through to your wife. Wouldn't you like to talk to your wife? And here again, we're in this situation where he's probably going to die, and he gets a chance to have one last talk to his wife, and he turns her down, and he just continues to talk to her.
That is very strange, isn't it?
This is very suspicious, and it seems like this was a case where maybe they were not very confident of the voice morphing. So the guy playing Todd Beamer will not talk to Todd Beamer's wife, afraid that that'll blow it, and just talks to someone that doesn't know Todd Beamer, and so therefore wouldn't recognize the voice as being wrong.
That seems like a plausible interpretation to me. And I think where all of this leads is to the conclusion that this was a very, very complex and very carefully created public relations stunt using techniques that intelligence agencies use, that Hollywood uses, and so on, to create the illusion of something happening that is, you know, it's pure illusion or spectacle. And I really think that 9/11, as Lynn Margulis has said, was the most outrageous public relations stunt ever, and in some ways the most successful. And I think people in the truth movement really should kind of get used to think this way, that it's you know, presumably scripted, storyboarded, and, you know, put together from the ground up by a false flag team, rather than this idea that, oh, they just sort of piggybacked on an attack that was coming anyway. It would be so much easier to just create your own rather than to have to worry about anybody that wasn't under your control.
Yes, I think we're just about out of time. Let me finish with the most famous of all the stories, the Barbara Olson story. Of course, the official story was that Barbara had called into the office of her husband, the Solicitor General, and talked to him twice. And he's told people that the first call was about 1 minute. And then I think he told Larry King that the second call was 2, 3, or 4 minutes long. But there were lots of debates about, did the American 757s really had seatback phones?
Right.
There were debates about whether it was first told that it was a cell phone, but everybody agreed that that couldn't be, that the plane was plenty high, that there couldn't have been a cell phone, and the FBI certainly declared that all the phoning was done by feedback phones. But when their official story came out, here's what they said, that with Flight 77, this is the flight that supposedly hit the Pentagon, that Barbara Olson's name was mentioned, but that she attempted one call, but it lasted 0 seconds. So this is the FBI itself saying this, that these stories were not true. It wasn't 1 minute and 2, 3, or 4 minutes. It was 0 seconds.
Yeah, that's a stunning
admission. This is pretty strong evidence that the official story about the phoning was false.
And the fact that this was the one phone call allegedly made to the Solicitor General of the United States, the lawyer who had argued the Bush team into office after that 2000 rigged election, it just adds to the outrageousness of the whole situation. And so the FBI says Ted's been saying something that's not true for years and years and years, and no investigation. Well, I think it's time for one. David, it's been wonderful talking to you. You sound great. It's great to have you, you know, back in action, back on the show. And I really look forward to your future published work and to continuing this thing until we get it right, get a real investigation and straighten out the historical record and end these wars. Thank you so much for coming on.
Okay, Kevin. Very good to talk to you again.
That's Dr. David Ray Griffin, author of, is it 7, 8, going on 9 books on 9/11, including the new Pearl Harbor and the new Pearl Harbor Revisited, best introduction to the subject in print that I know of. And the most recent one is called Cognitive Infiltration, an Obama appointee's plan to undermine the 9/11 truth movement.
You were just listening to the conclusion of an interview between Kevin Barrett of No Lies Radio and author Dr. David Ray Griffin. To learn more about Kevin Barrett's work, his website is truthjihad.com. I would also encourage everyone to read all of Dr. David Ray Griffin's books on 9/11. And if you're new to the 9/11 truth movement, I would suggest you begin with The New Pearl Harbor and The New Pearl Harbor Revisited. The New Pearl Harbor Revisited was a Publisher's Weekly pick of the week when the book first came out in 2008. I'd also like to encourage the listeners to donate these books to your local libraries. And now, here are the 9/11 and related news updates. First, the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth are really gearing up for the 10th anniversary and continue to grow their organization and its influences. For example, in just 8 months, the number of Facebook followers for AE 911 Truth and World 911 Truth has doubled from 40,000 to almost 80,000. This demonstrates the power of social networking and the steady growth of the 9/11 Truth movement. Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth has also just recently begun selling lawn signs, and here's what they say about them. Start your own neighborhood 9/11 Truth awareness campaign with AE 911 Truth's new yard signs. Your neighbors need it, visiting relatives need it, the postal carrier needs it, and passersby need it. Now you can take a stand for the truth leading up to the 10th anniversary of 9/11 and find out who is going to wake up to the implications of World Trade Center 7 because you took some action. Post them at your tabling events downtown and display them during your actions on the street. The front of the sign features the second-by-second freefall of the 47-story skyscraper that NIST explains was caused by normal office fires. The back of the sign features the inspiring 3 beams of light shining into the evening New York City skyline. Of course, the 3rd beam represents the 3rd skyscraper to be destroyed at a rate exceeding many explosive-controlled demolitions. Ask questions, demand answers is the call to action here. The signs come with steel H support stands and can be modified for handheld demonstrations. If you prefer to print your own, you can download side 1 and side 2 of the artwork from us at no cost. And again, their website is ae911truth.org. The architects and engineers also have a new book out that will be available for purchase on July 27th, and it's called 9/11, The Simple Facts, Why the Official Story Can't Possibly Be True. And now I'm going to tell you about some upcoming events. The first one is the Progressive Movie Night, sponsored by WWUH. The event takes place on Thursday, July 28, 2011, at the Auerbach Auditorium on the campus of the University of Hartford, and it begins at 7 p.m. The movie is called Meltdown. This devastating story brings together issues of nuclear weaponry, nuclear power plants, Iraq and Afghan-Pakistan wars, and the mass media. And again, that's Thursday, July 28, 2011, at the Auerbach Auditorium on the campus of the University of Hartford at 7 p.m. And the next event is the 9/11 10th Anniversary Movie Marathon, which will take place on September 10th from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. It's in the Auerbach Auditorium on the campus of the University of Hartford. Stay tuned for more details on this 9/11 movie marathon. And now, the last event that I want to tell you about are the Toronto hearings. These are international hearings on the events of September 11, 2001, and it's sponsored by the International Center for 9/11 Studies. It's going to be at Ryerson University between September 8th and 11th, 2011, And it's 4 days of citizen hearings where they're going to present the best evidence that's been gathered in the 10 years since 9/11. Some of the witnesses who will be sharing the evidence are Kevin Ryan, Graham McQueen, Richard Gage, Niels Herit, Cynthia McKinney, Mike Gravel, Peter Dale Scott, David Ray Griffin, Michelle Chusadovsky, Jonathan Cole, and Lance DeHaven Smith. For more information on this event, you can go to their website, which is torontohearings.org. There's a lot of really good information there, and I'd encourage you to check it out. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.